introduce our speaker.
Hi, my name's Rick again. So, jokingly, I told Stephen that I would spend 42 minutes introducing him, and he only had 3 minutes to talk, so, but I won't do that. Thursday night, we come together in the men's stag meeting, and a lot of us, you know, work the program together, we become friends, we call each other, we support each other going through different things in life, going through program, doing our best to walk through the steps and change ourselves and change our lives around us. And, you know, knowing Steve and I, we just about walked into these doors just around the same time. And he's a very, very special friend, a very dear friend, a very good man, a good example to me, and a great support agent for me in this program. And he comes from a place where they really actually do say controversy. So that I don't know if he started here, but anyway, from the land down under, the artist formerly known as Stephen, I'd like to introduce Stephen.
Hi everyone, my name is Stephen. And I love him, and I love a lot of men in this room, and thank you for coming up and speaking about Alateen. Really appreciate that, because I never had that. I've been in Al-Anon for 3 years now, and my husband died on December 1st last year, and I'm going to do my best to really maintain focus on how I got here and right-size what's been going on lately as well. But I can't, no guarantees. You know, my first qualifier was both my parents. They were both alcoholic. They both died of alcoholism. I used to describe my mother as the most compassionate bitch you'll ever meet. Because she was absolutely, she would give you the shirt off her back, but then come northeastern winter, she would take it back off you and leave you outside. My father I called the ever never present. He was always there, but he was just not present as a man or a father. And I thought he was a gutless wimp, gutless fucking wimp. I became both of them. I thought I became my mother because she was the domineering, horrible woman. But I learned through Al-Anon that I actually became both of them. I became the doormat and I became the domineering one. A domineering doormat. Sad but true. I had a great ability of making friends with a lot of alcoholics, a lot of drug addicts, and I had a lot of experience in low self-esteem. I had really great teachers of low self-esteem. I was a runaway. I lived a life of prostitution. I lived a life of sexual abuse. It was very after school special. And that was just my life. It wasn't really anything that I thought was outstanding or odd until I started to find recovery. And then I actually started to understand that that's not normal for a 15 and 16 year old to be doing, is having sex with dirty old men for money is not normal for a 15 or 16 year old, which is quite horrific when I look at a 16 year old today. It's horrific to see a 16-year-old and go, oh my God, I can't even imagine them as a prostitute. And that's where I come from. My parents gave me what they learned. They didn't learn great esteem values. They didn't learn how to love themselves, let alone love anyone else. And they passed that on to me freely. So, I think from the age of 20 to 30, I was with a man who I took complete advantage of, who took care of me, and it was never good enough. I heard David Knox tell me, say once in a meeting, he said he would raise the bar, and then Greg was his name, Greg would meet that bar, and then I would raise it again. So he never had an opportunity to actually meet my expectations, because I kept raising them. And the more I would raise them, the less he could meet it, and the less he could meet it, the more I hated him. And he was such a good, and he is such a good man. He's a very good man. He still lives in New York to this day, with the worst version of me. But that's not stupid. And I did that until I was 31 with him, and then I started to learn how to live life differently. And, you know, I changed a lot of behaviors, and when I put down some old behaviors, I picked up some other behaviors. And I picked up other behaviors. It still tried to harm myself. I picked up sex, I picked up sex to avoid change, and that led me to becoming infected with HIV. Which was one of those little life experiences that I realized, oh shit, if I actually don't take responsibility for myself, and if I don't actually do the work, I'm actually never going to change. I'm still going to look and seek for things to hurt and harm myself. I'm still going to look for things to take me down. I'm still going to look for things to kill me. And slowly the change started to happen after that. 5 years ago, after my husband was diagnosed with cancer, he went through two rounds of cancer, three cancers and two treatments. You know, I was kind of living okay, and kind of getting through life through the 12 steps, but they weren't really in full effect. And after 15 years of living in New York City, he and I decided to move to Los Angeles, where I could still make a living and hopefully just take care of him, because, you know, he was really not able to work anymore because the cancer and the treatment had absolutely stripped him bare. And so we got here, and you know, Los Angeles really brought me to my knees. It stripped me of my career. You know, you move to a different place, and I started all over again after a very illustrious career in New York, and started at the bottom of the barrel again. And that did a nice little number on my esteem as well. And you know, nothing I could say to Jonathan, who's my husband, nothing could change him. I couldn't hate him enough. I couldn't love him enough. I couldn't fuck you him enough. I couldn't be sad enough. I couldn't be happy enough. I couldn't be encouraging enough. I couldn't be anything enough for him to want to do things differently. And as a result, you know, through his own lack of seeking a program for his own addictions, he didn't drink or use anymore. But he didn't really seek an answer either. And he was very spotty and sporadic with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I just couldn't do anything enough to make him change. And it brought me to my knees. I was in a lot of pain. I saw him not taking care of himself. I saw him doing the bare minimum with his health to get by, but not doing the other stuff that may have led to a different outcome. And 3 years ago, I met a man by the name of Kevin, and I heard his story, and he told my story. It had sexual abuse, it had physical abuse, it and he had a brightness about him that I didn't have. And I'm repulsively optimistic. I am one of those repulsively optimistic people. And I was losing my spark, I was losing my light, I was losing the brightness that I had. I'd lost the brightness that I had. And that began my journey in Al-Anon. And the first meeting I came to was 7OLR. And I didn't share at that meeting. I was a little overwhelmed by all the straight men in the room. Some of them are attractive. That did bring me back the following week. And some of you will never know. So the next week I went to another meeting, which turned out to be my grand sponsor's garage, and I was surrounded by a group of men who just scooped me up. And after that meeting, I came back to this meeting on a Thursday night, terrified, because when I look around the room, when I looked around the room, it represented a whole bunch of men who'd either put me in jail, who'd kicked me, who'd called me a faggot, who had hospitalized me, who had abused me, who raped me, who had hired me as a hooker, and the room was full of those men. Physical manifestations of those men. And I was terrified, and I knew in that moment that if I didn't actually open my mouth up and tell you how terrified I was of you, and tell you why I was terrified of you, that there was going to be no hope for me to find any life. There was going to be no space for me to find a place to grow and learn love. I thought being gay was my problem. I really thought that was a big problem. And it's elemental for sure. But what I started to discover when I put my hand up and started to share about how terrified I was that everyone hugged here. I was terrified that if I hugged you, you were going to say that faggot's hugging me a little too long. It was a very real fear that, you know, and I told them the truth, and just from around the room, and I'm shaking and I'm crying, and just from around the room, I just heard men say, "We love you, Stephen. You're in the right place, Stephen. We got you, Stephen." And they still love me. And they know me. And at the end of the meeting, I was surrounded by men, and I was hugged more than I could possibly have imagined that an ex-hooker could have been hugged. And a lot of men was like, "I hope you don't mind if I hold on a little bit too long." And it was just beautiful. And I felt safe, and I felt protected, and I felt loved. And what I started to learn by coming to 7OLR is that although I am gay, and that's served up a shit show of ugly, I was actually raised to be a man. I was raised to be scared of other men. I was raised to be scared of affection. I was raised that I was not to show affection to other men, just like every single other man in this room. And I learned how to be a man in this room. I'm learning how to be a man in this room. It's not easy being a man. It's not easy putting down other people's expectations of me. It's not easy to put my own expectations down of me. And it slowly started to unravel here. And I came every week I came every week because I wanted what people in this room had. I wanted that freedom. I wanted to be able to let love in. It's not easy to do. You know, I don't know anyone that came in here fucking riding on a white horse. You know, I simply don't know anyone like that. If you do, and he's cute and he's gay, please point him in that direction. I'd really appreciate that. And I would call my sponsor, and I'd go, he'd say, how are you, Stephen? I'd be like, I'm really great. And then Jonathan this, and then Jonathan that, and you wouldn't believe what Jonathan did. And he'd be like, oh, okay, and how are you? I'm great. And then you wouldn't believe what Jonathan did. And he let that go on for a couple of weeks. And as I hear myself say it now, I can't even believe I didn't hear how ridiculous I sounded. And one week we went through the same routine again. How are you? I'm great. And then Jonathan, and then fuck him, and you know, oh. And he said, you know what, Stephen? If I want to know how Jonathan is, I'll ask him. That's when I learned the phrase, fuck you, to my sponsor. And I still use it today, and then we have a laugh, because he knows that I'm hearing the truth that I don't necessarily want to hear. And he said, so I want to know how you are. And I burst into tears, because I didn't even know. I didn't even know how I was. I didn't even know how I felt. I was either devastated, or I was really happy. And there was never a middle ground. And that blew my mind. You know, that really blew my mind, that I didn't even know who I was, or what I liked, or how I liked it, or what I even liked to eat. My husband didn't eat for the last 3.5 years, so eating became about sustenance for me. And I had to start to learn to eat again. I had to learn how to, go to a restaurant, or even Rick and I were talking about going somewhere the other night to get something to eat, and he said, why don't we go here? And I said, no, can we go somewhere else for various reasons? And he said, where do you want to go? And I was like, I had no idea where I wanted to go. I didn't have a clue where I wanted to go and eat. And he did. And, so I'm learning how to do these things that I never got a rule book for. I never got a rule book to learn how to, make a decision. You know, because I always thought my decisions were wrong. I always thought that I would make the mistake, and I always thought that people would be angry at me if I made the wrong decision. So I never made decisions. And God's no weirdo, because when I came into Al-Anon, that's when Jonathan really started to die. And so I started to learn how to make decisions. I started to learn how to understand things like money. I started to learn to understand things like, working. I'm 49. I'm a late bloomer with this shit, And but I was ready. I was ready to start learning how to live a life. And there were times that Jonathan would be in hospital, and I was angry, and I would call 4 or 5 guys on the way to the hospital, and I'd just be angry, and I'd be angry with the first 1 or 2, and then by the time I got to the 3rd and 4th, I was a puddle of tears because I didn't realize I was actually scared. I'm not angry. Anger is rarely what is wrong with me. It's fear. absolute horrific fear is what sets into me. And anger is the easy one for me to pick up because I learned that from my mother. You know, be a bitch and everyone's going to stay away. You know, keeps everyone at bay. Or be really happy. And that's another thing that would keep people away, because people would always be like, Stephen's fine. He's got it going. He's fine. And it was like I was dying inside, you know, because I didn't know how to tell you that I was scared. You know, I didn't know how to tell you I needed help. I didn't know how to say, I'm scared my husband's going to die today. You know, because that happened for the last year. I woke up in the middle of the night 5 times to find him not breathing and unresponsive this last year. I didn't know how to get through that. I had no idea how to get through that. I didn't, the first few times, I didn't even know how to call somebody. I was so terrified. I didn't even know how to pick up the phone. And, you know, bit by bit, you know, I was given an option. I either picked up the phone and called my brothers and sisters in the program to tell them what was going on, or implode and shake and not know what to do. And the decision came quicker and quicker to pick up the phone. The decision came quicker and quicker to, you know, employ Al-Anon, you know, employ step one, I'm powerless over the situation. I can't, she can, so let her. You know, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. You know, 4 and 5 helped clear the pathway for me to understand that fear, and that I didn't have to participate in that fear, and that I actually, you know, could stand back from that fear and see things a little bit more clearly. And do things like have a doctor removed from the case because I thought he was a fucking asshole because he kept talking over me when he would ask me a question and I would try and answer it. And I eventually said, you need to shut the fuck up because you keep talking over me. And he said, I'm really sorry. And I said, there's no need to be sorry because you're not going to be working with my husband anymore. And I went to the charge and so the doctor changed. I didn't learn how to do, I didn't necessarily do it gracefully. But I never had to do it before. And I got to be gracious with the charge nurse. Don't let that asshole back in the room. That was as gracious as I could get. And I only got that gracious because I kept making phone calls. And I would walk out of the room and I would call people. I would call Kathleen, I would call Rick, you know, I would call Eric. You know, I called people and said, I don't know what to do. Or, oh my God, I think Jonathan's dying. And it's really hard to walk down that road because one of those fears was, oh my God, I hope people don't think I'm crying wolf. I hope they don't start thinking I'm crying wolf because I've never had to do this before. I've never had to walk down this road, you know, in that situation. And Al-Anon gave me the tools to learn how to do that. Because I don't have them. I don't have them. But you do, and you give them to me. You give them to me freely, and you give them to me with an open heart. And I get to take them out of your hand and then I get to use that tool. That's how it works. That's how it works for you 4 newcomers. Miracles happen here. Don't even fucking kid yourself. Miracles happen here. And it's not some big fucking namby-pamby God woo-woo miracle. True, real life happening miracles exist because of Al-Anon, if you show up and you do the work and you walk through the fear. That is not a lie, that is a fact, that is a promise. I hope you stick around, because there's magic here. the steps where things change. The steps where I get to see what I used to think made me a fuck-up. But I realized I'm not a fuck-up. I didn't know how to do it differently. So I get to see that very clearly doing the steps. I get to see that, oh, okay, this behavior doesn't work for me anymore. This might be a good replacement behavior. This might be a good replacement behavior. My husband, Jonathan, was an oncology nurse, so I would be in hospital and it would be Thursday. And I would say, I've got to go to my meeting. And sometimes he would say, can you stay a little longer? And I would say, no, I can't. Because if I'm not sane, I'm not going to treat you very well. And he just looked at me and he said, you're right. And he'd say, you better go to your meeting. And I'd come to my meeting and then I would do fellowship. And that was also one of the things he taught me as an oncology nurse, because he would see people, he would work with patients that he would see for 3 and 4 months in the hospital. And he would come home and he'd be like, I wish I could get it through the family's head that they need to take care of themselves, that they need to go and watch a movie, that they need to go to the gym, that they need to go and have dinner with some friends because they're killing themselves. And he taught me that. So when the time came that he was in hospital a lot, I wanted to just stay there. But I already had him telling me that, and then I had you people backing that up, saying, if you don't take care of yourself, you're going to die. That sounds so dramatic, you're going to die. But you're going to die if you don't take care of yourself. I'm going to die if I don't take care of myself. I am going to die if I don't take care of myself. A very interesting thing over the last month since I've been dealing in the grief process, I gave myself from the 22nd of December to the 2nd of January, which is the day after, which was, the first was his 59th birthday, and I thought, I'm going to just be alone. And I was alone. And people would call and they'd say, are you by yourself? And I'd say, yes. And do you want me to come over? And I would say, no. I want to be alone. Because I wasn't lonely. I wasn't lonely, I was alone. Come the 2nd of January, the 1st was really hard. His birthday was really hard. I haven't ached and I haven't shook and I haven't cried so much as I did on the 1st of January. The 2nd of January came and I was going into that place of, fuck him, he hasn't called me. Fuck her, she hasn't called me either. And then I realized that as much as I am in a time of needing love and support, and I need my friends around me, and I need my friends to carry me because I don't know how to right now, on the 2nd of January came very glaringly clear, oh, now you're lonely, and now you're isolating, and now you're starting to blame everyone else. And now is the time that you need to start being of service again. I still need my friends to carry me. You know, I keep hearing this is going to be a really long, hard, brutal process. And I keep hearing that it gets very lonely. So I keep reaching out to my tried and true tribe when I'm in tears or when I'm sad or when I don't know what to do or when I'm you know, in that. But then there are times that people are calling me, like my sponsees, and I just have to answer the phone and go, what's up? You know? And I get to listen to them. And I get to listen to them talk about their really menial bullshit. But the truth is, that looks menial to me right now because my husband's just died. But they're living their life. And that menial bullshit can take them down. So while it's menial to me, it is very real and it's very big to them. And my job isn't to tell them all about my woes because my husband's dead. My job as their sponsor is to shut my mouth and listen to them and love them and let them know it's going to be okay. It just sounds like you're going through a really shitty time today and I'm really sorry about that. That's my job as a sponsor. And you know what? Every time I do that, in this whole period of horrible grief, I am released. I feel my heart lighten up. I don't feel that sorrow, pity, that pain and that hurt that I have every morning I wake up. I have that little moment of relief because I get to hear them. I get to get out of myself. Sponsees are miraculous. They are a lifeline. They are a buoy for me. And I love them so dearly. I'd be dead without them. I'd be dead without you. I'd be dead without you and you and you. I'd be dead. And I'd be dead without them too. And they might be dead without me. Because that's how it works. It's a big, wonderful little circle of life that we get to have in Al-Anon if we so choose, if we so choose to do the work, if we so choose to show up. You know, that's what happens here. So it's a real gift. You know, God is a gift. The steps are a gift. Amends are a gift. It's not big and bad and scary. The fourth step is not big and bad and scary. The fourth step is that key that unlocks that door for me to walk through to become free. I get to put down all that old crap that has been drowning me for all of those years. I get to put down that crap that my mother gave me and that my father gave me. I get to find forgiveness for people that I once hated with such blind passion, I would wish the worst. I used to go, I hope my mother died in pain. Yeah, I did. Because she was a bitch. And, you know, it was like she did the best she could. And for years it was like she did the best she could, she did the best she could. And I kept feeling like, God, I'm such an asshole because I can't forgive her. And then one day I heard from somebody, she did the best she could, Stephen, and it wasn't good enough. That gave me freedom. Gave me freedom to let her go. Gave me freedom to let her know that she did do the best she could and it wasn't good enough. Ah. Wow. That was transformative to me. You know, going through step four, I really love, there's ideas in the big book that I really love, and one of them is self-seeking. And I never knew what self-seeking was, and I was told that self-seeking is demanding to be right, demanding to be a victim, and unwilling to forgive. And I'd never heard that before. I couldn't figure out the difference between selfish and self-seeking. Selfish is easy, I'm good at that. And I didn't realize how good I was at self-seeking either. You know, and I did this fourth column on my mother, and one day I'm standing at a grocery store and I have a bottle of water. It's three registers, one line for the three registers, and my mother's everywhere. She's a man, she's a woman, and she's everywhere. Still, and she's been dead since 96. And there's a woman standing over at the register here, and the woman behind the register said it's one line for the three registers. This woman turns around and who do I see? My mother. There's my mother, this angry, scowling, pained woman. And she comes and she's standing right behind me, and I start to shake. And there's a name I used to call my mother that my mother told me never to use. And it was the only defense mechanism I had against her. And so when I was confronted with people that represented my mother, I would use this word. And I was just about to turn around and say, "You miserable bleh." And I turned around, I was shaking so hard, and then I realized, oh, here I am demanding to be right. I'm demanding to be a victim, and I'm unwilling to forgive. They all go hand in hand for me, and I turned back around, and I was shaking so hard, and I just started to cry, and I looked up, and I said, "I don't need to be right today, and I am not your victim today." And in that moment, I was able to forgive her. It changed everything. My mother still shows up in my life. And I've never had the same response to that person who represents my mother since that day. And that's because of the step work. And that wasn't the first round of steps that I learned that. It's coming back to it. It's relearning. It's hearing different ideas from different people, from men and women who I respect and I love, and I go, "How did you do that? Oh my God, I've never heard that." You know, I'll be reading literature, and then I think we've all had that experience. We're reading the literature, and then one day it's like, "I don't know when they put that in there, but that's amazing." You know? And that's what happens. That's what happens because I'm sticking around, and that's what happens because I'm a seeker and I'm thirsty. I'm thirsty for recovery. I'm thirsty to be free. I'm thirsty to live. You know, I'm chasing my grief the same way I'm chasing my recovery. I don't want to avoid. I don't want to. Apparently grief is going to stay with me forever. That's what everyone says. It never goes away. Everybody who's been through what I've been through, years down the track, said it never goes away. It will transform, it will change, but it never goes away. So if it's never going to go away, I want to learn, how the hell do I live with it? How the hell do I manage to be sideswiped one day with the grief? What do I do? How do I deal with that? Well, I deal with that by just showing up and talking to others, and I deal with that by seeking the answer, and I deal with that by allowing myself to be a puddle of tears on the floor, just like in Al-Anon. If I allow myself to be a puddle on the puddle of tears on the floor with my sponsor or my brothers and sisters who I love in this program, then I get to learn something new. Then I get to learn, when I get vulnerable, that's when stuff gets let in. That's when I can let stuff in. It's when I get vulnerable, you know? I am grateful for the alcoholics I know in my life today. I'm grateful that I can get to go to an AA meeting and hear what they have to say. There's power in going to an AA meeting if and when you're ready. It's exactly the same disease. It's exactly the same disease, and it doesn't matter. I see whatever side of the coin a person is on, at the very best, this disease wants us absolutely miserable. And at the very worst, it wants us dead. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be saying us, I should be saying me. I really hate it when people go, "This is what we should do." I really hate that. So this is what we should do. You're welcome. But that's what I should be doing if I want to be free. There's not really a lot I have to do in order to change. That's pick up the phone. That's call my sponsor. That's call my friends in Al-Anon. It's to go to a meeting. It's to pray. My prayer in the morning is, "Get me the fuck out of my own way, please. I'm not good at this organized third step prayery stuff. I don't even know what it is until I hear people say it. I'm like, okay, that's the third step prayer." I got to keep it really simple for me. My God has a sense of humor. She's quite fabulous. And that's what works for me. And that's the beauty of the 12 steps and the program, is that it doesn't matter where your God comes from. It doesn't matter where my God comes from. My God has changed so many times over the years. You know, Jonathan's my God now because he's bigger than me right now. So I get to talk to him every day. Sometimes I talk to my dogs that have passed away because they're no longer here and they're part of the bigger ether. And even today, I talk to my mother and I ask her for help and I ask her for guidance because I love her today. Doesn't mean she's not a bitch. But she was a sick woman who didn't have the opportunity of finding the answer to her life like I had the opportunity of finding the answer to my life today. So to honor her, I get to have a different life. And to honor her, I get to put down my bad attitude about her. And I get to love her today. And I get to love my father today because he too was a sad, sad, sad man who had no means of a life. And he had to deal with her on a daily basis. And she was not a pleasant woman. I don't know if she was just an alcoholic or whether she had mental illness as well, but it looked like she had a nice, healthy, rounded mix to me. And that's okay. That's okay today. So, do the steps. Surround yourself with people who are smarter than you, because you'll be smarter than them in other aspects. Listen to people you trust. I listen to people I trust. I listen to my gut today. I trust my gut instinct today. I trust it when it says to call somebody. I trust it when it says don't go near them. Time is not a tool. I've seen a lot of people with a lot of time who I wouldn't want what they have if they gave it to me with $10 million. And I've seen people with half the time I have who just serve up recovery in the most beautiful way that I can just sit and just fucking feast on what they're talking about. It's beautiful. I have done things in this program. I am learning not to judge others by doing the shit that I have judged others for doing. That's a big one. Because I'm fallible. I'm not a fuck up anymore, but I am fallible. Words matter to me. Words make a difference to me. A fuck up and fallible are two very different things to me. A fallible makes me human. A fuck up just makes me a bad person. And I'm not a bad person. I just wasn't served up a dish of deliciousness in the beginning of my life. And now I get to choose the dishes I feast on. And the dish I choose to feast on is right here in this room. And the dish I choose to feast on comes from all of you beautiful waiters and waitresses out there. And I get to be that waiter and waitress too, depending on what I'm wearing. So, stick around. The miracles happen. I'm so glad Alatine was here tonight. I really appreciate you guys. You're the future of Al-Anon. Stay strong. You impress me and you blow my mind that you can be so young and show up for the hard shit. It's an honor to have you here tonight and an honor to hear you fighting hard. Really appreciate that. And with that, I'd like to thank 7OLR. I'd like to thank my incredible friends. I would like to thank my sponsor. Hey. That's Brian. I love him. He makes me laugh. I'd like to point out everyone that I love, like Juan, but, you know, Dublin, I mean, Willie, I mean, fuck, I mean, you know, Bob and Deborah. Deborah's my potty mouth sister. We share obscenities, and I love her for that. Sounds like you know who she is. Chris in the back, You know, there's just a world here for me to take, and my world changes when I actually pick it up and take it. So thank you for letting me share tonight.